Welcome to the South African edition of the Dope Black Woman podcast, the podcast where we share our personal experiences and expertise on topics that impact our daily lives. I'm Romantha Buta, the community lead for Dope Black Women South Africa.
Welcome to another episode of Dope Black Women. As you've heard, we are all the way from South Africa this week, and Romantha Buta is your host, and she's the one who's speaking. I don't know why I'm talking about myself in the third person, but I'm here now. Let's keep it moving. Today with me and the beautiful soul that you hear on the other side laughing is Caroline Esther. And as you can see by the title, we are speaking sacred BDSM. So she has a long bio, and I'm only saying she because she will introduce herself now. But from what I know is that she is from Haitian descent, queer, non-binary, a mother, and a sensual dom. Mm-hmm. So, without further ado, welcome. And please tell the people who you are. Please maybe unpack for us what all of that means. And maybe just summarize it.
So sensual dom, mom, queer, business owner, all those things. So I think what I've done is, over the 20 years of my career, there have been a lot of things that I've been passionate about and a lot of things that I've been into. And I didn't quite, at the time, they all seemed like separate things, you know? So I didn't know how to bring them together. And so now at the grand rising of 40 and still traveling down the 40s line, I've created something that helps me bring it all in one place. And it's under LDMM, which is Lung De Moon Wan, the private membership-based social club for artists, creatives, and spiritual workers. And underneath that umbrella, I'm able to do Sacred Table, which is the intentional dining experience that we provide, and Sacred Body Journey, which is how Romantha and I came into contact. And so I've been a practicing dom. Well, you know what? Maybe not practicing. I've been in the life about 15 years, practicing personally. Around about that time, but only this year started to do it professionally. And so for me, I saw within the practice, it's very, very white, just to put it, mm-hmm. Just be frank about it. And there are a number of reasons for that. And so it's growing now with more POC practitioners coming to light. But I felt what was still absent in even those spaces is this, is the sacred. And so what do I mean by sacred? Which is anything that you venerate, anything that you honor, anything that you think is special. If you go to church, then you act a certain way because you feel like the atmosphere is sacred. That's whatever you call church. That's not, reserving it to any kind of denomination, but anytime you enter your realm of spirituality, you consider that sacred. And so I put that in front of the word BDSM, which is breaks down into bondage, discipline, devotion. I've added that word to it. Submission, I've taken that word out and I've replaced it with service. Discipline.
And why is that?
Well,
perhaps finish your definition and then tell us why you replace those words. Yeah.
Where I place those words. So, and then sadism and masochism. And so just for the audience who's not familiar with any of that, sadism is a person who likes to give what we consider pain. And then the other one, masochism, the one that receives it. The quote-unquote pain, which I have also changed that to from pain to existing on a spectrum of pleasure, right? So why is that? Again, BDSM is a very, no matter who practices it, an alien can practice it. no matter what age, race, creed, color, there is an aspect of ritual and ceremony that is involved throughout the whole thing, but we're not using that. We're not putting that at the center of what's happening. We're only seeing, you know, people being, you know, heinously tortured. and we're like,
hanging from body parts.
Yes, very in lots of places. And while that's an aspect of it, for me, I think what I want to put to the audience it forefront is the aspect of ritual and ceremony and why this is a deeply spiritual interaction and engagement that two or more people are engaging in, and why it's called play, you know, why it's traditionally called play. Is because we are walking in the realm of fantasy and what people consider fetishes. But I looked up the word fetish and I hadn't done it before, but it's the word itself, the etymology of the word just means something that is really, that's important, that's honored. It could be a thing or an idea. And I'm like, wow, I don't know why I never thought to look up at that before. But when we think fetishes, again, we think people that, you know, like to get their feet eaten in the dirt or, and that turns them on, you know, they like weird things, but that's really not what it is. So that's what the sacred and in the BDSM mean to me. And the devotee, again, the word submission felt very triggering to me, you know, especially as a person of color. And, you know, I've heard and read just language and material around how white people have used this to somehow, you know, sustain the spirit of slavery and colonization. And so I'm like, you know, gasp.
Yeah.
Right. And so, and while I get that's not true for them in terms of how they're practicing it, I think for people of color, anything that is triggering of a trauma that we have collectively experienced, I think we need to rethink the language that takes us back instead of forward.
I've been meaning to ask this question when you started speaking about, as Black people using the word submissive, using the word dominant. What happens if it's an interracial couple? You know, what needs to happen in order for that discussion to be open?
Well, that's the beautiful part about, BDSM is that those conversations, they happen organically. They're a part of the process. You can't not have the conversation.
So do you have counseling? Do you have counseling sessions? Do you have, would you call them? Consultation? How would it work? Could anyone just come and experience?
Yeah, I mean, personally, yes. You know, I do take people through, I don't want to call it counseling necessarily, but, you know, there's, you know, just the, you know, honest Q&A about it. And I think, you know, to your question, though, like what happens when you have an interracial DS or DD dynamic? Again, they have that conversation. I did have a friend who had a white dom, a Black South African woman who had a white dom. And, you know, this is no secret. Anybody that knows me knows how I feel about white people. So, you know what I mean? You know, literally no secret about how I feel about white people.
Yeah.
But, and so I was just like, when she told me that, I was just like, is it? I'm like, how is that working out for you? And, you know, and she said that their relationship has transcended that. And I accept that as her truth. I accept it as their truth. It's just like spirituality. At its fundamentally, spirituality transcends all identities, fundamentally, right? But the issue is we don't live in a world that respects those fundamentals. Right. And it's shown by our social and our political climate. So I don't want to engage in the dark about the different social and political things that that people of color consistently and daily battle with. So I think within their play or any play that's interracial or any play in general, you negotiate what types of activities are hard limits for you or soft limits. And by hard limits are things that, you know, you're just not going to try. Don't ask, don't think about it, don't dream about it. It's not happening. you know? Yeah. And then there are soft limits, things that you're like, oh, okay, I haven't tried that before. I did try it and I didn't like it at first, but you know, I'm willing to do it again to see where it goes. So you have those. And so for some people, for some engaging in that, whipping might be a hard limit. Like, don't do it. It triggers me, you know, that kind of thing. So you have those negotiations to be able to work through that. But I think BDSM in general, if you're going to approach it, you should have gone to a place where you have done a significant amount of self-work in analyzing your own traumas and your own triggers and how those things show up in your life. And while you can use BDSM as a therapeutic resource, I personally don't recommend that it be that exclusively, but that's just personally because people do.
So we spoke about interracial conversations, but how do you just start the conversation in general?
Like with someone, like randomly?
Yeah, let's say you have a partner, and the other question is, it sounds like it is relational, meaning that there has to be two or more people in the dynamic. Could a single person like myself experience forms of BDSM, and then what things are available? Because I don't think flogging myself would work. So
right. So as you,
what do single people do?
What do single people do if they want to engage?
Exactly. And what do couples do? How do they start that conversation?
So for single people, well, for anybody, but I'll start there just generally. You know, as you know, Ramantha, at the events that you come to, you've seen that I give like a pamphlet that gives kind of like a basic list of some kinks, you know, and that basic list just by itself has about 100 things on it. And that is dramatically reduced, right? There could be even thousands, right? And some of those things could be practiced alone. Masturbation, erotic photos, wax play, you know, even in my wax play, I do wax play on myself because I want to test the temperature of the wax. I want to feel the sensation. I also, you know, so there are things that I do to myself before I even do to my devotees, just to gauge the safety of it. It's like cooking food and I'm going to eat it first. So if you don't, just to make sure it's not poison, right? Okay. Let me taste it. Cause I don't want you to die. You know what I mean? So let me taste it. So it's the same thing. So there are endless things, and you and I could talk about that offline if you're actually interested in what you can do just for yourself. And it's just about learning what your kinks are. Yeah. You know, what are you into? And from that, I can share with you how you could, you know, do those things dolo, which is probably, it's actually quite cool, you know, to be able to do that. It's like masturbation, you know, you don't.
Yeah, it's like exploration, but on another
exactly,
level.
Exactly. And with just couples, same thing. Go ahead.
Just speaking on, you know, it includes masturbation, it includes erotic photos of yourself or others. What would a spectrum of sacred BDSM look like? What is the most common BDSM element that you do in everyday life, or that you've heard of, or that you know is a part of it? Or what are the most extreme versions of it? Because I think, as you've mentioned earlier on, when people think BDSM, they think of the most probably towards the extreme spectrum of people, of blood and of pain and of scarring. What would you say?
I think I can answer that question with the first question that you had, because we talked about the singles and you asked about how does that conversation happen with couples, so I could blend those answers. In everyday, I think the thing is, it's so interesting to me how people are like taboo with it, because I'm like, you do that anyway, you know,
and
you're right in your own sex. There's, you know, like rough sex, as we can consider, like some people, they just bow, they need to go in, you know what I'm saying? Like if he not going in, bow, 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 then they're just like, yo, what are you doing? You know what I mean? Like personally, that's how, like, I like a bitch to like be doing her nails while I'm doing. So I just, please insult me so I can do better.
Hey, now we get into it.
Right? So I can, because if you know, if you're like doing it, be like, when have you started? I'm like, oh, is it? Okay, I got you. You feel me? So I think that we even do some of these things. We hair pulling, back scratching. Those are very common things that happen in the bedroom. You know what I'm saying? Role playing, people wear their little doctor uniforms and, you know, and stuff like that. Those are all a part of kink, you know, and we're just not calling it that. And I've actually had people come to Q&A sessions, like the dialogue sessions that I have around Sacred BDSM, saying, wow, they actually have been doing a lot of this stuff with their, exactly, with their person. Yeah. They just didn't call it that. And so now in conversations with me, they've just taken their list of like maybe 10 things that they just normally do in J to like 200 things. And now they start to incorporate toys and, you know, just different things. Like, it's just, you can go like literally forever. You would never get bored with your person by coming into this life with it. Y'all are going in every time. Trust.
Speaking of trust, segues into my next question. What are some of the key elements for a BDSM play to be successful between a couple?
Like, trust is definitely a huge part of it. And it takes time to be able to really build that, unless you're in, you know, one of those spaces, you know, like a sacred BDSM party, a dungeon. And dungeons typically are places that people go to play. There are a few or a couple that I know of in South Africa for those who just want to go spectate to kind of see it happening. Just warning is that it will be predominantly white people. And sometimes that's off-putting for people, but so trust is one of them. A type of courtship I believe in, and in traditional BDSM, they identify the whole experience being kind of like three processes, which is negotiation, play, and aftercare, right? And so for me, I think what I've done is kind of like expanded that, which makes it that sacred BDSM thing to include that, because it's not like, you know, you just walk up in Checkers and you see somebody, you're like, hey, should your house or mine? You know? and you just start like negotiate. I mean, yeah, sure, you're right, it happens. But we're talking about the typical person isn't really doing that.
Yeah.
So what I've done is I've expanded that process to 9 components, which is 1, the initial connection, 2, mutual vetting, which means exploring desires, agreed upon definitions, past trauma discussions, personal healing practices. That's the mutual vetting area. And then there's establishing the trust space, which can also take time, like I said. And that could just be you know, in quotations or even out of quotations, dating, you know? And not to say that doms date their subs, but I think that there is a form of getting to know you. Because before we dive into that space. And I think that establishes the trust space. Like, you know, I see you, you see me. I feel like there's a level of safety and comfort where I can feel like I can move forward with you.
So basically, don't rock up with your one-night stand.
If you're a proper BDSM practitioner, like understanding what goes on in that process, I call grounding after negotiation. So the grounding is we pray together, we meditate together, We use all types of, and we do this during the grounding stage and during play, where we use a cache of energetic modalities, from Reiki to yoga to candle magic to crystal magic, you know, all anything that you need to bring you to the present, because you're about to, because when we start playing, you're about to leave. Yeah. I'm going to take you away from that. So let's land, let's be where we are, see each other, meet each other, and then travel together. Right. So that's grounding. And then we go into play. And that play varies based on what I understand your kinks to be. And what you understand my kinks to be as a dom, because the shit that I like that we want to weave in there as well. And then we go into aftercare. But again, even with aftercare, it starts from the beginning. It goes throughout the entire process. It's not something that happens. I should actually change that to during care, to care on a continuum or something.
Yeah.
Because that's literally what's happening. Again, even if they're not saying it, when you see it on TV or anywhere else, there is a consistent care that's happening. I just do it in a more, that's why I call myself a sensual dom. There's a lot of sensuality around it, because I just feel like you catch more bees with honey.
That's how you made me cry. That's how you made me cry. Now. You made a hard thug cry in the club.
thug it out, Amantha. Thug it out.
Listen, I'm a thug. I don't cry. And wow. Let me tell you. Let me just give you guys a snippet of what happened.
Please.
So I saw this event that one of my dope black women shared in the space, in the WhatsApp space. I was like, ooh, this is interesting. And what caught my attention is that there was a disclaimer that said that preference will be given to people of color. I was like, ooh, definitely. Yes, sign me up. And so we ended up going, this friend of mine, and when we got there, it was just the space, walking into the house, the establishment, just already felt like there was a presence there. So I just felt at home. And then, so that specific night was role play. And there was first some belly dancing. It was entertaining. And then you came out with your, devotee. You came with your devotee.
Yes.
Sorry. I almost messed it up. Mm-hmm. You came with your devotee, and it was just so sensual, but also so caring at the same time. I felt like I felt safe on her behalf just watching. You know, I felt safe on her behalf. And so I think a big element there is, as you've said, trust and safety and setting boundaries and knowing the person. But what stood out for me, and the friend who invited me, was also like, ooh, that was the interesting, most interesting part of it. Not necessarily the role play, but the fact that you prayed to your ancestors before you started, before you commenced. And also, you know, that you both did it, but also that you burned impepo, incense, what would it be called? The other word from impepo?
Sage.
Yeah, you were burning sage.
Yeah.
And it was a spiritual experience. And so I know you focus on sex, the energy, but I do want you to also maybe touch on the spirituality side of it. Because a lot of people, let's say if you are Christian, you do not necessarily associate God with that kind of play or, you know, sex in that way, because sex is sacred, but the Bible tells you it's between a husband and a wife. And as we know it's something that's not very expressive in many ways. It's missionary, basically.
Oh, boring.
Listen, shame. Okay. So just in terms of that, like people who would come there and say, but I'm not very spiritual. I don't know what I would do.
Or not very sexual.
Yeah, I don't know what I would do to ground, you know, to get to the grounding stage. What would I do if I'm not necessarily in tune there?
I'm going to go back really quick just to finish the steps. So we have the next is energetic cleanse. So after we finish playing, we have to now cleanse. So what we know of, and that's going into your, it leads into the question that you just asked about spirituality. So in that experience, you there is something that's happening on the spiritual level between you and the devotee. Some people have styled them as soul ties, or you know, because it's happening. We're in an energetic like mm-hmm. bubble. So we are merging our energies. And so to be safe about not taking energies forward that are a disservice to us, we do an energetic cleanse afterwards. And then we do a debriefing of the experience, like how did you feel? How did it go? What was not okay? What was okay? You know, what should I have done less of? What should I have done more of? You know, that kind of stuff. We do a debriefing, and that helps us to color future experiences. But this, what you said about the spiritual part, and the thing is, you know, sex is inherently spiritual. It is absolutely problematic that the societies and messages that we live in divorce the two, when it's like doing surgery on conjoined twins. Sex and spirituality were born together, literally at a core organ. When you separate it, you run the risk of one of the two not surviving. Nah. And so that's why when in my work I talk about sex the energy and not necessarily sex the act.
Yeah.
Because sex the act is only one expression of sex the energy, right? And so, and when I say sexual energy, what am I talking about? Energy, just at a scientific level, means the ability to do a work, the ability to do something. That's what Webster, Merriam, Google, all of them say some version of that. And so sex is things coming together to birth something else. What we know or been taught that birth results in babies, or gender. Mm-hmm. You know, gender is when we think about sex, we think of gender and we think of procreation. But what they don't say is that is not the at the end of procreation just doesn't mean babies. It means anything. Basically, anything that you see, anything that you know, a cup, a shirt, a manuscript, a film treatment, all of it is a result of sexual energy at play. You know, if we take it from what we understand it to be, which is a process, you know, it's going to take a process of programming. Even myself, I'm still in that unprogramming, haven't been practicing it 10 plus years, because sex the act is on the list of things that can be done with sex the energy, but it's just on the list, you know? And so, and here, what I'm able to do is show people how vast that list is, and for them to connect it to their day-to-day lives so they can use sexual energy to do what they need to do. I mean, write that, you know, go through your to-do list of shit that you haven't done, clean your room, make amends with your mother, you know what I mean? You know, whatever you need to do, apply for that new job that you've been afraid to apply for. It's just, we're only just talking about using that energy. And anytime you feel turned on, aroused, or anything like that, that only means that you have now activated your creative center. That's really what that means.
I actually saw a TikTok of someone saying that, I'm not quite sure if he's a sex practitioner, but he was saying that when you tapping into a sexual energy doesn't mean you masturbate or you have sex when you are aroused. And I think you've explained it beautifully that the energy, that you are sex, yes. You everything that composes yes. of you is sex, and it's sexual and it's energy.
Yes.
So yeah, yes. I mean, I think speaking of, you know, the misconceptions of BDSM, what are some of the things that people think BDSM or sacred BDSM is, and what, you know, what are some of the myths that you can maybe debunk for us today?
Well, when I say sacred BDSM to people, they don't hear the sacred part, right?
Yeah.
They just hear BDSM.
Yeah.
And if they do hear sacred, they're confused. They're like, to your point earlier, it's just like, why are you bringing the two together? That's blasphemy and you should be hung. And this is like, oh, really? Like you're putting, you know, and people have said this, you know, at the events, and before they saw it. And then afterwards, they're like, yo, when you started like burning in people, they almost got scared.
Yeah.
Like, why are you inviting the ancestors to your debauchery? And then afterwards, you know, one woman, she said, you know, I've never thought to do that, you know, before sex or before anything like that. And she's like, maybe that's why my shit is so fucked up. Maybe that's why I can't have a proper, sustainable sexual experience, because I'm not calling in my people to like look out for me. You know, just like you might be on to something. Just like, maybe it's because I exclude them from the experience, which is why it has been less than gratifying, because our ancestors want us to live in our liberation. They want us to be ecstatic. They want us to be living our best lives. And they understand that sex is the only thing that enables all of that.
I think one of the questions at the event was, you're calling on the ancestors here, and some of our ancestors were slaves. You know, is it not perhaps, maybe, how do you know that it's not perhaps causing more harm than good, tying yourself up, getting yourself whipped when you have the ancestors in the room?
They ain't slaves no more. In that realm, you know, and I talk to people about, you know, when I do some, I hesitate to say a word, counseling, because I'm not a counselor or a therapist by trade, right? Mm-hmm. But I do, in my own spiritual practice, you know, I work with people around death and transitions. And one of the things that I say to people is that this person is now more powerful in that realm than they could have ever been in this realm. So this is what you have access to now. Our ancestors, they transition and they become super entities. And they're just there waiting for us to like ask them for something, like to guide us. You know, they're just, because that's their only purpose in that realm, is to look after us. So in those spaces, I think, you know, what's happening is, because I do believe that they want us to live in our liberatory pleasure, is they're not asking about pain. They are leaning into your pleasure. And somebody had asked that at the last event. So I had two devotees at the last event, a male and a female one. And at the end, somebody asked the devotees, on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, what's like your pain? Like, you know, 10 being like, and you know, one, and she answered the question fair enough. But then afterwards, she, you know, during the debriefing, she said, you know, I wonder why they never ask about what my pleasure level was, you know?
Yeah.
She's like, they always ask about the pain. But because the line between the pain and the pleasure, when a devotee enters what they call headspace, subspace, it's pretty much you enter into a trance. You know, and in that trance, in that realm, you only feel nicely. You only feel nicely. So that's what she's saying. Yes, to the outside looking in, it because of the way the mind is conditioned to view what's happening, it's like, wow, this hurts.
Yeah.
But after a certain point, and I do a lot with sensation play too, and especially during the waxing, because I'm using fire, there was at one point, there's fire and there's ice. And if you ask the devotees what was the difference, they couldn't tell you when I had fire and when I had ice on them.
Wow.
The body now interprets it all as one sensation, pleasure.
Do you think we are too conservative when it comes to Black people specifically? Just in relation to our cultural beliefs, religious beliefs, shame, public knowledge, perhaps, or lack of education?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, conservatism has brought itself. I think it's, to be honest, a very colonialist, perspective.
Yeah.
Because a part of what I've been doing over the years is studying ancestral technologies, spiritual technologies, ritual, and from the global South or the African diaspora, which is broad, right? And so in that, some of the commonalities were so fascinating around their approach to sex and gender, where there are rituals where they're having actual physical sex, like in a process, you know what I mean? For whether it be a rites of passage, especially with rites of passages for men, rites of passages for men are highly sexualized. You know, and we don't, unless you're in the tribe or in the clan, it's almost like pledging for a fraternity or a sorority. I mean, that's what happens in America, where when you pledge, you know, you don't tell people what you went through, what they call the hazing process. You know, it's like you're sworn to secrecy about what you actually went through. And so that happens throughout a lot of rites of passages as well, where you can speak about it broadly, but in order to maintain that ancestral knowledge and protect it, you're not allowed to say what actually happened, you know. But I've been privileged and for a number of people to trust me with that information, and to see that I'm actually not far off at all about how sex is, the energy is incorporated. Nudity is a normal thing, yeah, with the diaspora, like normal thing. Like nobody has, it's like clothes is like a very modern concept, actually. Clothes is a very modern concept. But at the time, they weren't being looking at, you know, this person be like, oh, wow, look at her titties. No, it's just like, no, she came out the pussy like that. That's what she looked like. And there's no, it wasn't eroticized. And that's how actually I taught my children as well. My children feel no way about nudity. My son grew up around naked women walking around in America. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And he has a relationship with the female body that doesn't allow him to eroticize just because he saw a pair of titties. Mm-hmm. He's just like, I've been seeing titties all my life. Yeah. Like seeing titties doesn't mean anything to me.
Perhaps maybe we could touch on, you know, the elements of parenthood where it comes to what you do. How does that, mm-hmm. how does that flow into what you teach your children? You know, the birds and the bees, how do you have that conversation? You know, I'm not quite sure how old your children are. Maybe you can give context, but how has sacred BDSM and your work flowed into parenthood?
My children are 26, 18, and 16. And so I think for me, I've just tried to keep it very fundamental around understanding their bodies, mm-hmm. and the sacredness of their body, the specialness of their bodies, especially to my son as well, but specifically to women, to the girls, because they're often just preyed on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And my daughter asked me, you know, questions, my youngest ones, you know, when she wants to wear certain things and, you know, and they're like tight and revealing. And I'm like, no, I'm not going out into the world with you looking like that. And she's just like, why not? You've taught us that it's not our clothes. It's not our responsibility for people's ignorance around the body.
Yeah.
I'm like, true. I'm like, but I can't control their behavior. I can, you know what I'm saying? I can only control you. So it's not that you're wrong for wanting to present as you present, but it's them I don't trust. You know what I'm saying? And I don't want to send messages to them that I can't protect you from if I'm not with you. So she knows I do, because there's a pole in the middle of the house. So she's just like, oh, what event did you have? And I'm like, you know, and her parents of her friends come over. And sometimes I haven't taken down my adult toy store. Mm-hmm. And they're like, and they're dropping their daughters off like, can I chat to you for a second? And so I chat to them and I tell them the whole thing. And they're like, oh, okay. So how much is that one? So it's really quite interesting. It would be interesting if this was a reality show. Because the children are
Netflix
now.
Netflix is jump on
especially,
it.
Oh my God. Because I do have children walking in the space. But I think, again, I'm not teaching them the vulgarity and around it. the lens that that they're learning this through is one that's healthy, right. One that honors their body and how they relate to other people. I tell my son, you know, hashtag me too is real. I tell my son, you know, I mean, me and him got into it. He's 18 now. We got into it recently because, you know, I told him, you know, now that he's in the world, he's, you know, he's not, apparently, I don't know if he's having sex yet, but he wouldn't tell me anyway. He's just weird like that. But I said, I was just like, if a girl comes to me and, or if you get like, and she says you raped her, do you know, I will believe her.
Yeah.
And he's just like, really? Are you serious? I'm like, yeah, because I'm gonna say, let me tell you why. Not because I don't believe you, but because clearly you put yourself in a situation that made her feel violated, whether that was your intent or not. And when you are before the judge, I will, and he happily gives you your sentence, I will bring you food, I will send you money, but you will go to jail because I will not support that. I'm like, so your thing is don't have sex. I tell them, don't have sex with drunk women. It's just because you need her to have consent and you can't get consent if she's not. I'm like, so consent is the thing. So, and he felt ways about me for a while. He's just like, you're trying to tell me you will take this person's side, even though it's not true. I'm like, so your thing is don't put yourself in situations where that can be the case. I understand that sometimes it's not truthful, but the line is too blurry. And women are often at a space where we're disadvantaged in our stories. So yeah, to me, she's always right. So check yourself.
We're about to wrap this up. And what you've spoken about is so beautiful in terms of safe spaces for Black people. I think that's where we align. Our communities are very, very focused on creating these spaces and making sure that it's safe. Perhaps maybe give a disclaimer in terms of how your events work, what your offerings are, and then we'll wrap it up.
Yeah. So as Ramantha said, they are POC exclusive, which means people of color. And, you know, I've had people ask me, well, what do you mean by that? I'm like, I mean, POC exclusive. So
I said what I said.
Understand POC to be?
I said what I said.
And would you understand? I said what I said. Because I think they're looking for me to say no white people.
Yeah.
And I've had this conversation too many times, you know, already, and I'm happy to have it as often as I need to, but I don't want to make apologies for creating a space that honors people that have been historically disenfranchised, people that have been marginalized and X'd out of spaces that they could also benefit from, especially ones that have a deep spiritual context. Mm. Like sacred BDSM, because spirituality is the core of how people of color have sustained themselves over eons. So for me, it's less about no white people, because it's not them themselves. Because I have some dear friends that are white, and they would, if I told them, I have told them, and they said, no, we won't come. Absolutely. That makes sense. We'll support you in other ways. You know what I'm saying? Because it's about having the highest content of melanation in a space.
Touch on your offerings.
And so the gifts are getting doper in terms of how they're fashioned. There is a strong performance aspect to each of them. So it's literally just becoming some sort of performance house now, where BDSM is just one of the things that they experience, and the themes wrap around those performances. So we have vocalists, drummers, theater people, choreographers, everybody that's now connected to how we produce these events. And so the offerings, we do two signature events. One is Sacred BDSM and the other is Sacred Table, which you have to come to, Ramantha.
Don't call me out during the people.
Sacred...
I'll come.
Okay. So Sacred Table, is showcases my work as a chef, where it's a multi-sensory dining experience that really just brings all of your senses together around food.
Yeah.
So the space is animated and it's like a 3D experience with food and mindful eating, conscious eating, and not just eating because that's what we know to do, but having a deep thoughtfulness mm-hmm. around understanding our relationship or building a relationship with food that is sacred. And the space itself is, like I said, it's a membership-based space. So as far as amenities to the space, we open officially in Jan. So right now we're just doing soft launches, but by Jan, all the amenities will go live, from sauna, basketball court, tennis court, a list of all types of energetic modalities that they have access to, spa services, heated pool. They can rent, to members it's free, which is the guest rooms in the space. Right now, people rent the space for film shoots, photo shoots, product launches, end of year events, festivals, weddings, that kinds of stuff. And there's a restaurant that operates during the day.
And that's not even the end of it. You do workshops, you do womb healing. Come on.
Yeah, for Sacred Body Journey.
So we do
workshops, and I do kind of those little parties, those bachelor parties for women. Nice. Or girls' night out kind of thing. But I also do it for men mm-hmm. as well, like bachelor, so it's not gender specific. Men need this work too, is this medicine as well.
Wow.
We do past partner cleanses, which I talked about earlier. Couples play. I believe a couple that plays together stays together.
Okay, amen.
So,
amen.
Amen. So I can be the facilitator of their experiences, both sex the act and just sex the energy. So as well, to help them move through that area in their lives.
Come on, we need a workshop. If you're listening and if you're in Johannesburg, come through. Where can people find you, online, offline?
Yeah. Online, they can find me at langdemunmon.com, which is langdemunmon.com, LDMM. I mean, I think if you just Google LDMM at this point, it probably just comes up. Sacredbodyjourney.com. I don't need to spell that. I think that's there. And we're on Instagram and Facebook, probably soon to be Twitter. Again, if you just Google it or search us on any one of those platforms, it should come up.
It was such an amazing chat. Most of the things that you spoke about, we have touched on, but I always walk out of a conversation with you with so much more knowledge, not just on that, but just on life. I think also because we mirror each other's lives. You're such an amazing person to know. Welcome to the Dope Black family. And I hope that we can expand on this and offer workshops together as communities and spaces. I know a lot of dope black dads were like, oh, hook us up. We also want to know more. So hopefully, we can have joint sessions here in South Africa. If you're elsewhere, she also does all of these services online. So just holla. And that's it. One last question before I let you go. What makes you a dope?
Yeah.
What makes you a dope Black woman? What do you think makes you a dope Black woman?
I think we had talked about this before too, because I vacillate between gender orientation.
Uh-huh. So dope black person.
Dope black person.
Yeah.
That depending on the day, dope Black woman as well. Uh-huh. So you're right. Authenticity. I really like. Like my emotional IQ, I work a lot on that. And my spiritual IQ, I work a lot on that. So I just believe in practices and ways of life that, minimize harm to other people and us to take responsibility for that. And I am a champion for people winning. So, If you want to win, holla at your girl, boy, depending on the day, person here.
All right. And it's a wrap. Thank you so much for joining us this week. Just hold on for all of the information if it's your first time listening to us on where you can find us. And we'll see you next week. Cheers.
Shop, shop.
Thank you so much for joining us this week. For more content, follow us on Dope Black Woman 1 on Instagram and Twitter. To join our community, drop us an email on southafrica@dopeblackwomen.org. See you next week.